Hello, this is Richard Mull with Mullet Over Podcast, and this is the most impromptu podcast we have ever done. We actually had a meeting here today where we reached out to some grassroots political activist types. We interviewed some different people on our podcast, and the Lord's been speaking to me about getting involved, that we have to, at the least, be praying and fasting for our nation, and that's historically been such a game changer. And we have done that, and we'll continue to do that and more of that. But I also know that the Lord calls us sometimes to get directly involved, called Gideon to go, you know, knock over a statue, and called different people to just take over and lead the charge of a nation throughout history to free people. And so the question I've been asking is, Lord, how can I be involved? And we've got a facility here. We're talking about possibly having a pastor's gathering or just open to people coming to learn how to get involved. And so thought I'd start with just some of the people that I knew. Sharon on our staff has been going to a lot of different activities. And so started with this lunch, and we were sitting there, and I was like, some amazing people, amazing stories, doing, I think, really important and amazing stuff. And I was like, man, I wish we had this on camera. So we just set the studio up pretty quick. And I want them to get to know each one of you, so I want to ask you to introduce yourself. But I will say that a lot of very vibrant, good discussion was taking place. And then I asked a question, what would happen if the church got involved? And the reaction was profound and immediate. Like, we could change the game if we really got involved, if we became an influence rather than being influenced. So that's one of the arenas that I think we're going to focus on our sharing today. So first, just a quick introduction of yourself so everybody can get to know you. And then whoever wants to tackle that first, we'll see how that goes.
Hi, I'm Kirk Christensen, Lieutenant Colonel of the United States Army, retired. I'm a grassroots patriot activist and a Hillsborough County Republican committeeman in the precinct in West Chase, and also a member of the Republican Liberty Caucus and president of Town Hall Patriots.
I'm Tom Vail, coming from Lake County. I'm currently running for supervisor of elections in Lake County. I'm also vice chair of the Republican Party in Lake County. So anything I say here is not coming from the Republican Party. It's coming from me personally. I also have a one-hour pro-life radio program on Salem Media from Orlando.
I'm Carmen. I'm also a grassroots activist. And what got me really involved was seeing how the Democrats have such a great ground game. And that always bothered me as a Republican of why are we not doing the same thing? And why are we not out there replicating what they're doing and changing our culture for the better by getting more grassroots activists involved?
I'm Audra Christian. I'm the founder of Town Hall Patriots. I'm also one of the Back the Blue girls that painted the Back the Blue mural in Tampa, Florida, and also a grassroots organizer who was an activist for the school board, well, against the school board, years before it was fashionable.
I just want to say that a lot of times when we're like, why doesn't church do this? Why doesn't church do that? And we the Lord's like puts his finger on us and goes, mm-hmm. Why don't you do something? And you guys are some of those that I know, just gotten to know you a little bit, but here your faith stance and how God was the one that was pushing you. At the same time, we know if the whole structure of the church could move in a more united fashion in this arena, that we could turn the nation around. Yeah. I believe it was just praying and fasting we could see it change. Mm-hmm. And yet I believe that the answer to the prayer, very often when I look back at Luke 10, he said, ask the Lord of the harvest to send laborers into the harvest. Go is the next word. Yeah. Immediate answer to prayer. Ask the Lord to send laborers in the harvest. Now go. So I'm going to be more quiet from this point forward, but I want you guys to respond to that. What would it look like? What could be done by pastors, by the church, and feel free to.
Okay, so imagine what would happen if 100 people showed up at your school board to pray, lay hands on your school board members, to do prayer walks around the building, to ask God to bless the school system, to ask God to show them where the waste is at, to ask God to turn people's hearts. Imagine what would happen if just 100 people did that. I know that I do that with a girlfriend of mine. There's just two of us. We do that. Imagine if 100 did that. Imagine if you showed up to your county commissioner meeting and you once a month you brought donuts and coffee to your county commissioner people and you just sat and you talked to them and you got to know them and you asked them what they needed. A lot of these even Christian office holders, they have like Stockholm syndrome from the left. And, you know, if we're always attacking them and we don't give them someplace to run to that's safe, they're going to hide from everybody. And I saw that during our activist days when we were yelling and screaming at the school board and at the county commissioners. And I realized, wait, they don't know who to turn to. We need to make a place for them to turn to. And that was one error I saw beginning, you know, in my activism. That was wrong. We never gave them that alternative, a safe place to turn to. I think it'd be powerful.
I think one of the other things we have to do is we have to energize our people. And they have to start to come to meetings where they're going to learn more things directly what to do. They're going to learn to go out to canvas or learn to phone bank. They're going to go learn how to lobby. They're going to learn to be a citizen activist on the ground, not being afraid to knock on the door of that state rep or that state senator and talk to them and show them your concerns. At the same time, as you're going to meet a like-minded community of people, they're going to feel energized and you're going to feel support from. And also the other thing we have to do is in the Christian faith, our pastors have got to work with like the Florida Faith Foundation to start to preach about culture from the pulpit. Bring the issues as they relate to our culture, whether we're talking about abortion, whether we're talking about taxes, it all has to relate to culture. And these are the things, if we do that, we're going to start to get the word out, that information out, to a broader audience than just the grassroots activists that we have right now, which is a small army. Because, mm-hmm. you know, 80% of the people out there, but 20% do the work. Mm-hmm. You can increase that to 25 to 30%. Just that alone will make a difference. And those new patriots that are there that don't know what to do are sitting in Sunday service in our churches throughout the counties here in Pinellas and Hillsborough counties, Manatee County, wherever you're at in a five-county area or across the state of Florida, waiting to hear that message, waiting to be told what to do. And that is where we can help, and our pastors, and help the ones that are with the organizations to get them energized, because we're energized and working with our people. But there's a whole untapped group of patriots out there that want to get involved.
So if I could say a couple things. I forget the chapter and verse. It's in the book of James, I believe. Faith without action is dead.
Yes.
Why were we put on this earth? Were we put on this earth to let evil take over and run the world? I don't think so. Go back to when Moses was leading the children of Israel out of Egypt. Brought them to the promised land. What did they say? We're afraid to go into there. Those people look dangerous. What did God say? Okay, you guys wander around in the desert for 40 years until you're all dead. Do you want that to happen here and now to us?
I think for me, I was involved in an inner city Bible study in Kansas City for 5 years. And the whole premise of that was, and the left knows this all too well, Marxists know this all too well, when you change a generation, you change a culture. And so the premise of that Bible study was we started from kindergarten through fifth grade with a once a week Bible study, and we invested in those kids. We taught them the Bible. We had to show up other times throughout the month to develop relationships with them and just to teach them about Jesus and teach them about morality and ethics. But then we built on that with job skills. The middle school kids got tutoring. The high school kids got tutoring and job skill training. So it's teaching them not only about Jesus, but how to provide for themselves, to be productive citizens in society. And I think that's, we forget, we have to really realize this is what the left is doing. They're changing a generation and they're going to change our culture. And I think as Christians, we have sat on the sidelines long enough and we've gotten comfortable. And I get it. We have jobs, we have kids, we want the best for our kids. But when you look 20 years down the road, our actions now, is that really producing the best for our kids in 20 years when they're taking over, when they're adults? What are we paving the way? And right now it's, we're losing our culture. We're losing our culture to things that are not good and they're not godly, and they're just not good for a culture or a society, because it's just going to lead to destruction.
Hitler knew this, Stalin knew this, and it's in the book of Proverbs. Teach the children.
One of the things that I noticed, we were at a, some of us were at a amazing conference, same conference, I don't know what it was called exactly, this weekend.
Save Our Children.
Yeah, Save Our Children. And I noticed that it was mostly white-haired people. And one of the greatest shifts that I've seen is, I don't even know the best wording for it, but it's like it's accept all the differences. That is the thing that is, there's so much pressure. And don't make waves, accept all the differences. And very often our generation is considered like irrelevant today. That to me is kind of alarming, that because the need, I think, is pretty desperate. Mm-hmm. What would be the message to the next generation? Because some of our investment is because of wanting to save them and to save what we know the world could be from what we've seen.
Okay, so one thing I've noticed about, like, millennials and under, especially Gen X, Gen Z,
yeah.
What they really want is something that is real. Mm-hmm. I've noticed, you know, they got the participation trophy, everybody got the awards. It was so, you know, evened out, and they were all placated so much that they want genuine things, and that's the gospel. Give them the gospel, like it or lump it. I think they appreciate that. I think letting them talk a little bit too helps, you know. They've been told that, you know, crisscross applesauce, close your mouth, like forever, since they were two. Mm-hmm. That's how they started them in preschool. And if you're that age, you know what the crisscross applesauce is. It's basically sit down and shut up. so I think they like to be heard. The generation after that is actually even more dynamic, what I've noticed. So, like, if you're like 18 to like 12, they're actually very opinionated little kids, and they actually like a lot of things that we're doing. I'm surprised with that, but reaching them, I think that's like person to person to person to person. I think Lucas Miles does a good job on TikTok. That's my take on, yeah, like Gen Z and under. Sorry, I keep kicking your foot.
So I don't have an answer, but I can agree with what you said. I visit different churches all the time, trying to tell pastors and Christians they need to get involved in society. And almost every church I go to, it's people over 60. There's very few children. It's really depressing, discouraging, disheartening. We've got to change that. Mm-hmm. I think people need leadership. And like you were saying, they need a message. Mm-hmm. They need to hear something that's right and true and good.
I think it's about hope too. I mean, just pivoting off that, with Lucas Miles, hearing him speak several different times, I think we should all probably learn from his playbook. What struck me one time I heard him speaking was how the younger generation, the majority of them, spend the entire day just dealing with anxiety and the depression, fear, anxiety that they have. And I think sometimes because we were the generation too of like, oh, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps you know, don't cry or I'll give you something to cry about generation. So, you know, we were just kind of like, you know, very stoic. And I think just we have to, instead of, and that's even in the political parties, you know, we like to name call or label or, you know, I think we have to get beyond the labels. I mean, we're all, each generation is different for very different reasons of what that generation has gone through. So being able to just bring it down a notch, listen to the younger generation. Okay, tell me about why do you think you feel anxious? What's your anxiety about? What's the fear about? But then we all know that the cure for that is the hope of Christ, you know, and being able to direct them back to the truth, something to give them that is truthful, and they can think about it and mull over it and just be authentic and just be the authentic Jesus and give them that hope that I think that they're looking for.
I was just going to ask you if there was some way, something on this earth that could help relieve the anxiety and the depression. Besides drugs.
Well, I think a lot of it is because this generation, this new generation, has grown up with this mass media culture, a massive information war that's being directed on them every day. So they can't ascertain truth. And a lot of times they've been taught what to think instead of how to think. Mm-hmm. And so when you get them to church and you speak about the gospel and you see the ultimate freedom and critical thinking was provided by Jesus, you have free will to think about these things. The young generation, my daughter's 20, and she said, "You're too judgy, Dad, you're too judgy." I said, "No, I'm just observant. If I see something, I'm just going to observe it and speak about it." They've been taught that anything goes. It's 2024, I heard 2023, women can do this, men can do that. There is no moral boundary. And the only place we're going to find that is in the Christian, in faith. In faith, where you get those boundaries, you get that set up. So it's getting your children active, getting them to youth group, taking that time away. If you have to get a carpool to them, you can't get them there. People can help. And maybe that's where community comes into play. I can take your son to youth group or your daughter, this kind of thing. Get them around like-minded people who are doing the same things, and that's a support system. Because everyone wants to feel accepted, especially in the generation. I want to feel accepted. I want to feel loved and needed. But you need to be the right people. Find those friends, and those friends will tell you when you're doing wrong, not just when you're doing right. And I think that's the same with adults in all generations. It's finding that sense of community. And in this new electronic age, that sense of community is being lost. It's being consumed by this. It's being consumed by sitting in front of computers and internet working. The human touch is going away. And that is what we as patriots need to do, and Christians, bring that human touch and interaction back to everyone you meet, whether it's in a gas station, a Walmart. Don't be afraid. You proselytize for God, you proselytize for the patriots at the same time. Because politics and our faith are interwoven. I think said it best, Karin said it, that when Jesus does come back, he's not a theological king, he's the king. So therefore, we need to lay that groundwork right now. And it's not easy. It takes that personal touch. And not everyone has that ability. But you do within your comfort zone. And when you speak, God gives you the words to say. You may not know the Bible as well as anyone else, but when you speak from your heart and people see that and they can honestly see you're wearing it on your sleeve, it'll make a difference. And it's relationships. Establishing those relationships, it's not just going out asking people to vote. It's showing that you care and getting involved.
I just actually had a thought, too, that trails off of that one. Mm-hmm. I think that politics, your political viewpoint, your political action is an outward expression of your spiritual condition, okay? So when we're seeing people not want to speak up and people being afraid, I think that's just a reflection of their spiritual condition. And I think that's why it's so scary to us when we watch people sit on the sidelines. Like, why aren't you activated by, you know, A, B, and C? They're just not. And it bothers me to my core. And that's what I came to assume is that's the situation.
What can pastors or people in the church do to get involved to help shift things?
Well, can I comment, kind of following on Kurt here and just what your question was? So look at Jesus in a human sense. Okay, when he was actually walking on the earth, he was not a king. He was an ordinary guy, a low-level guy. Who were his friends? Fishermen. Just ordinary people doing their ordinary life. Mm-hmm. And what did he do? He went to the establishment, the people who were running the Jewish community, and he said, "You people are doing the wrong thing." And that's what we can do. Anybody can do that. Go to your school board, go to your city council, go to your county commission. Tell them they're doing the wrong thing and they need to stand up and do what's right. Our country was founded on Christian principles. Mm-hmm. Declaration of Independence. First and the last sentence reference God. Our Constitution was based on Christian biblical principles all the way back into the Old Testament. We need to go back to that. We used to think we were a Christian nation. Yeah. When Obama was president, he tried to tell us different. And a lot of people listen to that. Mm-hmm. We've got to get back to the foundation.
Yeah. I think we also show that Christian faith is one of tolerance, too. The left has done a great job at depicting the Christian faith as being intolerant, white supremacist, all kinds of crazy things, but it's not even close to that. You go on Sunday in a lot of churches, you'll see it's all races, creeds, all mm-hmm. worked in together, living together, doing together. But the left has done a very good job through mass media of projecting that image, and that we're just uptight people that won't listen to any types of change in views, and we're judgmental and everything else. And I don't think that's true. You know, we're taught not to hate the sinner, but to hate the sin. And that's where we go about it. And we, in our churches, we see it all the time. You see the Sunday Christian, and they could be the most bigoted person when they walk out on sure. Monday through Friday. And yeah. then they show up on Sunday, and they're all pious. That's not what we need to do. And it's got to be that common man approach. Jesus was a common man approach. He was attacked because he challenged the powers of the day. And we have to challenge the powers of the day. We've become too complacent to think that government was going to do the right thing. But when you trust man to put them in a position of power, that power has ability to corrupt, whether it's at the county level all the way to the national level, mm-hmm. and they have to be held accountable. And that accountability comes from the morality, the values that that person holds. And if we elect people who don't reflect the values
yes.
that we, as yeah. grassroots patriots and Christian activists, want, we're going to get what we're going to get over and over again. So we yeah. can't just say, yep, election's the one and done. No, now you have to go back and say, yes, you're going to give us the Medical Freedom Bill to protect us because we don't want to be subjected to Big Pharma's control of our lives. You know, we want that control. Jesus' ultimate free will and faith. And then you start to talk to people about that. When I go talk to people, they say, really? Yeah, think about that. He gives you free will. Government doesn't want you to have free will. Jesus wants you to have free will. That's very powerful, even among the young, because they want control. Mm-hmm. They want to feel that they're in charge. But you tell them, yeah, he's in charge, but he shows you the path. It starts to resonate, but it's got to be done one-on-one. And that's hard. That takes us to give more of ourselves that we're already giving now to do this, because especially with the young, because the children, I mean, we've seen throughout history, you know, you capture the young, you capture the next generation, you capture forever. And this is the battle we're in every day. And I think that's why we need the pastors to preach on Sunday about the culture. You know, abortion, that's a culture of death. And explain why. Explain how things came about, where, you know, eugenics were brought together, and that to, you know, the underclasses need to be culled. All types of things that came about to justify that this is the position in society, and show that's not Christian love.
Right.
And that can be done, but it's got to be done. Lucas Miles, he keeps leading the way across mm-hmm. the nation. And we've got our own here in Florida, the Florida Faith Foundation, Anthony McDaniel, and guys like that, Pastor Bernard. We've got some great people, and they're working, the pastors, trying to get them. But we have to carry on their works and engage our pastors. And it's not just senior pastors, it's the assistant pastors. It's the leaders of groups, each one, wherever you go. And then talking to your friends, each one, bringing that out. Because that's going to get more and more the message. Like, you know what? People are hungering for that. And so that's how we have to get about doing it.
Do you have something to say? Well, I was thinking of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or was it Daniel, who yeah. said, "Oh, King, I'm not careful to answer you." Mm-hmm. Like, you have to remember who you are. When you're a Christian, you're the God, you're God's son. You know, you were the king's child. And our forefathers knew that. So when they wrote our laws, they wrote our constitution, they were already under a stifling government system. So they wrote it to where our government is under us and we are under God. And so we don't need to be careful to answer the legislator, the city council person. We need to remember and remind them, you come under my authority. Right. If you're not going to talk to me, next. If you're not going to come under my authority as a candidate or as a office holder, I don't owe you my vote. I don't care if you have an R, a D, or an I. I am the ultimate authority because my vote, I answer about my vote to God. And we need to remember that and take that stance. You know, people running for office are running as a servant, not as my leader. I'm their leader. You do what You honor God, you honor the Constitution, you honor my position as a voter. And I think that position, taking that strong of a position, is extremely important. I really do.
That's a key point. Yeah. So I think bringing it back around to your original question of how do people get involved, get engaged, I think it depends on what your interests are as well. Because, you know, being grassroots activists, you know, all of us have knocked thousands of doors. We've made tons of phone calls. But some people come up to us and say, I'm not going to go door knock. You know, well, great. We need someone to drive our door knockers, or we need someone to help with social media. So I think whatever your bent is, however you're equipped or gifted, or your day job, can that translate into a way to help your local party or a conservative group, or what your passion is? If you are passionate about the abortion issue, there's groups out there. I'm big on not reinventing the wheel. Find a group that's already doing the work and join the work already being done, because we don't need 10 people doing a particular issue or item 10 different ways. Like, let's coalesce together, come together. There's strength in numbers. So there's the Susan B. Anthony Foundation. There's, you know, there's so many organizations. If your passion is, you know, about the abortion issue, if it's, you know, if you want to get involved in a political organization, research your local Republican Party, or there's conservative clubs. You can get on Facebook and find conservative clubs. If it's the medical freedom issues, you know, there's groups out there. So there's information out there to where if you're passionate about something, you don't have to go reinvent that. Go find the people that are already doing it. Not everyone has to be a door knocker. Not everyone has to be a whatever. So you've got Dan Schultz, who is really huge on the Precinct Project. He's the one that really raised the awareness several years ago about the very ground level of political activism, of getting involved in your local Republican Party, becoming a precinct committee man or woman. And then from there, your local party will have committees, or, you know, if you want to follow legislation, if you want to be a door knocker, if you want to. So there's multiple committees in these organizations to get involved in as well. And then there's, you know, you can follow Lucas Miles. He gives good advice on religious ways to get involved. So don't reinvent the wheel. Go find something that's already out there and be practical and join in on what's already happening.
What pushed your button to get you to get involved in politics?
Wow. I think the biggest thing for me was two things. One, the 2020 election, and probably even worse than that was January 6th. Mm-hmm. What happened in January 6th was the largest entrapment operation in the history of the United States. As an intelligence officer, I could see that happen just instantly, what they were doing and how those planned out. And the aftermath of that, and in this hunt for innocent people that are being harassed, their lives broken, in jail for exercising their First Amendment rights. And I've fought for my country 23 years. We always said this in the military. I may not agree with your right. I may not agree with you what you say, but I'll die for your right to say it. That has gone away. We have a weaponized government that is doing things that, it's what you'd see in a banana republic. You'd see the Stasi doing East Germany. We have become what the communists were in their dictatorship, going after innocent patriots, especially Christian patriots. You know, one in five people that are incarcerated January 6th are military men, Marines, commando, air commando, special forces. I'm not talking about, you know, just your clerks and jerks. I'm talking about hardcore soldiers that know their business, that were out there. And this is the kind of thing we're seeing. And that's incensed me. So wherever I go, I talk about that. And that's why I say election integrity has got to be number one, because we can't elect good people. We'll never stop a government thing be weaponized against us. So it starts there. So election integrity brought me in, and that was all from the 2020 election and then that January 6th. And it still drives my passion to this day. And I continue to be, that is my number one issue right now. Without that, we have nothing. And we have to fix that system.
The hanging Chad in the Bush, the Bush presidency.
Florida.
Florida. And I lived in the Midwest at the time, and I was just getting started in my adult life. I'd graduated college, and I had a woman that mentored me both spiritually and politically. She was very involved in both. And that was my first election to ever vote in. And it really solidified the point that every vote counts and we have to engage. We have to get people out there. So I wouldn't say it sent me on this huge activist right at that point, but I never missed a vote. I stayed engaged. I tried to find out information. And then it's just, I grew as an adult and moved, and we all kind of talked, like a lot of us never knew what a Republican executive committee was until a few years ago, because I think it's just something that wasn't very advertised. But, you know, just always in the process, as I grew a little more and more as an activist and trying to get involved, and then being in Kansas City and seeing a retired Marine trying to unseat a Democrat incumbent in the Kansas City area on the Missouri side, because just what that Democrat leader was doing to his community, which was basically nothing at all. So this white man, military, retired, was like, I'm sick of seeing what's happening in this man's community. He's doing nothing for his community. And I really got behind him running for Congress, but then just still scratching my head of like, how does he keep losing? He has such a great message and a great ground game. But then seeing the activism and the Obama administration, the community organizers. So all of that just very much intrigued me of why are we not doing that on the right? Why are we not community organizing? Where are we falling apart? What's falling through the cracks? So I think that's really what spurred me on the last 15 years of trying to figure out that missing piece. And then once I became a precinct committee woman, like it started making sense, and listening to Dan Schultz and reading his book, and just the very base level of the way the founding fathers actually intended it to be is legislation from the most basic local part of our government. And that's the precinct committee person going out and educating our communities to get them engaged to then hold our local elected officials accountable.
So I've always been an anti-communist, as long as I can remember. When I saw Jimmy Carter as president, I was around 18, and I was thinking, oh, this guy's not that great, doing the wrong thing. Then Bill Clinton and Hillary, because that was, you know, two for one, I guess. I think she was running things more than she was. But something's not right here. But then when Obama was president, I said, they are actively trying to destroy our country. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't in a position to do much at that time. But it motivated me that something's got to be done. And it's just been in the last couple of years I've seen that I could really do something now. And I'm trying to do the best I can with that. I've committed everything, and so is my wife and my two children. We're just, our whole life is about saving our country right now.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so I was...
Now, how much are you guys getting paid to do what you're doing?
Zero. Zero. It's every dime of our pockets
I'm apparently a Democratic hack, so I must be getting millions somewhere. I haven't realized it yet, but I'm getting millions. I got started in the Summer of Love. Actually, a little before that, I was doing a little bit of activism.
Which is a new term for me. I've never heard it called that.
Yeah, I think so. Woodstock. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, that was a long time ago.
No. Me too.
That's a euphemistic term.
I guess it is. Yeah. So the Summer of Love was 2020, 2021, that summer when it was basically the second Kristallnacht. You know, my father grew up in post-Nazi occupied Austria. So there were certain events we knew about. You know, it was, you know, crammed into our head that communism is bad, socialism is bad. So I witnessed a second Kristallnacht. It was really like a crystal summer of just broken glass, you know, the night of broken glass. And so that is what activated me into activism. Before, I was just like a mom fighting for my children at the school board. And then that is when I became an activist. And what really bothered me about that is my husband, you know, and his position and the government and the television telling me my husband is bad because he's a Leo. He's bad and he's a racist and he's misogynistic. And none of that is true. And then what really kind of struck me to my core was them talking about changing the laws. And they were against the police. And it was kind of like I had a moment where I was pulled out of the scenario and watching it from above when I realized they're attacking our laws. The enforcement of our laws is what they're attacking. And our laws were not just written for us as innocent people, but also for the accused. And we must protect the accused, because our forefathers knew this when they left the country. In Europe, they had to prove their innocence. Over here, you have to prove our guilt. We can't go back to that standard of accusation. And so, like, it just bothered me to my core. And the next thing you know, back the blue and all of that. So founding Town Hall Patriots and yeah.
And all that anti-police stuff started under Obama.
Sure did. ACAB was the big one. It's my my niece's. Mm. Her husband is a police officer in St. Paul, Minnesota. When the riots were happening in the Twin Cities, we were living there, and there were teachers posting on their Facebook pages and telling their students ACAB, which means all cops are bastards. Mm.
I'll show you how to get rid of teachers if you want to.
Yeah, when they you know, and here's my
out
niece.
Out of the classroom.
Here's my niece saying,
oh, out of the classroom. They'll go work somewhere else. Trust
you know, my
me on
husband,
that one.
He's a great cop and he's a good man. And he would never do anything like that. And she was like so taken back by that. But I think also when you talk about guilty and proven innocent, mm-hmm. look what has been turned on its head.
Yes.
Look what patriots are being accused of things that these judges are doing. They're definitely unconstitutional. These cases are, whether they're against Trump or all the way down, the people who defend them, they're get your law license or anything you want to do, they'll take you on. And that's not our system either. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening today. It's all done a 180, and all because the government's been weaponized, starting under Obama, and now it's been on steroids after they laid the groundwork during that administration mm-hmm. to where we are today to complete the takeover and use that to silence any type of dissenting view. When it's policy related, it's not personal, it's policy related, but the government's being used against us, and the courts are being used against us. We really don't even have a refuge. We're supposed to be stand non-compliant and things like that. But, you know, 25 sniper rifles pointing at your kid's head. How non-compliant are you going to be?
Yeah.
My friend James Brett had experience with that. Yep. With January 6th. And so what used to protect us doesn't seem to exist anymore. And that's why it's even more important to fight back and make that change. Because we can't lose what made us a great country. It was our rule of law and that we would be treated fairly. And right now, we're definitely not being treated fair in a two-tier justice system.
Yeah.
The thing I'm wondering about is what is going to have to happen for more people to become active, to get involved. And because I was torn between two questions, so I'm gonna ask it both ways. What is happening that if people knew it was happening or believed that it was real, they would get involved?
Let me go back to January 6th defendants, okay? I've got a law degree. Never practiced law. I did it for public policy reasons. So criminal cases are overturned all the time because government hides the evidence. The exonerating evidence, the evidence of innocence. And this is what's happened in almost every trial about J6. The government is hiding the evidence or misrepresenting the evidence. The defense attorneys, the defendants, don't have the evidence to show that they're innocent. That's a huge manipulation. It's much worse than people see, much worse than people think. If they see that, they'll start opening their eyes.
So I'll go real quick. The first question was, what would have to happen? I have been wondering that for a lot of years because, I mean, it's not getting better. Our government system and the way people legislate and there obviously in Washington in any political setting, there has to be a reaching across the aisle and the working together. I think that's, we've become so polarized that's, I don't know how we're going to overcome that. But people sitting on the sideline, I've been wondering that for a long time. What has to happen? And I'm like, okay, they keep raising our taxes. How much more do you want to pay in taxes? And you just do nothing. Or all of the pornography in our schools, in the books. I mean, I go to the school board meetings and the last book I read from, I was literally, it takes a lot to shock me. And I'm like, I really don't want to read this out loud, but this is in front of kids' faces every day. I have to, I can't censor adults if it's not being censored in front of kids. So I just had to read it. And I'm like, what else is it going to take to get people, if parents knew what were in those books and what their kids were reading, it is, if it were made into a movie, it would have to be rated as porn, literally porn. And just, yeah, I mean, not even R rating. It would be at that top level of filth and disgust. You know, we see what phones are doing to our kids and the level of depression that is coming over the next generation. And it just, I keep scratching my head because it's like the frog in the pot of water. It's like, how much more, how much more, how much more? And a lot of us are sitting back going, okay, maybe this will be the next event that really gets people off the sidelines. And I don't know that there's an answer to that question. I really don't, because I just keep seeing it coming and coming at us with taxes and bad policy and the stuff that's going on in our schools and human trafficking and all the fentanyl, the open. I mean, we could pile that on, and it's not enough to get people off the sidelines. So I think that's the million-dollar question.
But I think people are opening their eyes little by little, mm-hmm. slowly. It's building.
It needs to happen a lot faster.
I agree.
Well, I think what's fascinating is, you know, Mao said it best, kill one, terrorize a thousand. So you look what's happened January 6th, and you look what's happened to President Trump, and how they're going after him, a man with his means to defend himself. The average citizen's seeing that and saying, if they come after me, I can't do that. I don't have anything. You have to be like our founders were. They were not afraid to lose their fortunes. They were not afraid to lose their reputations. They believed so greatly. We've come to a society where, okay, that's like, yeah, my neighbor lost his job. Like they say, that's a recession. I lose mine, it's depression. So we have to start taking that kind of mindset. There is really no icy trigger. It's going to have to be individual, because what's happened is the system is conditioned people so much that you'll learn to accept it and live with it. It's what the globalists say in the future. You'll own nothing, but you won't, and you'll love it. Mm-hmm. You'll have those freedom. Well, no. We don't want that, but it's going to take every individual to what is their level of pain. It's like some people have pain they can't survive. Others have a high threshold of pain. Well, I think that's what they're depending on, the government in general and these policies, is that we can push and push and push until you're going to push back.
Yeah.
And that's really, what is that level of pain threshold? I don't think that's unknown, unfortunately. We're not the World War II generation that lived through depression and that's got the guts is going to stand up and fight. We're the pampered American people that, hey, I've got a car still. I can eat still. I guess I'm okay. You know, it's, if you didn't have all those things, would that be the thing that's going to force you to take action? I don't know. But I know what they're doing these to show you not to want to take action.
Yeah.
And that is the key element. They've taken the rules and norms that used to protect us and been using against us, and they'll broadcast that, and people see it, and they become fearful.
Yeah.
And it's, fear is probably the greatest enabler of this system to control. It's fear, and that's what our government's doing. And as long as that fear factor's there, that pain threshold can be increased, increased, increased. When it hits, who knows?
I would say the burning gut feeling when you're watching stuff, for me, it's the Holy Spirit saying, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's a lie. Don't quench the Holy Spirit. Just open your mouth. That's a lie. Call it out. And it when you feel that burning in your chest, when you feel that, that's when you kick into action. You're not a victim who's been trained not to react. You react. And if it's badly, who cares? I don't worry about where it falls. Just react. I don't understand how people can tolerate that. I don't understand how the Summer of Love did not wake more people up, why it didn't bother. Oh, the fighting stopped. It didn't really stop. It changed battlefields. And every battlefield I go through as an activist, you know, I try to, you know, pan out. And what did I do wrong? What did I do right? What kept me from getting 100%? You know, you have to reassess yourself. But I've never, maybe one time I regretted opening my mouth, but usually I don't. Once.
I think one other point to make this thing is that they're masters at using diversion.
Mm-hmm.
When things were going in the positive method, we're exposing the corruption of the government, exposing Biden, all of a sudden, boom, the tanker hits the bridge.
Yes.
Changes the narrative. Mm-hmm. They constantly change the narrative when things mm-hmm. are starting to take hold and they're seeing more people are complaining, whether it's the price of eggs, the price of gas, rent, everything, household issues. And all of a sudden, some event's going to take place. So then they focus on that. And the kids, like little kids, 3-year-old soccer game, they go to that ball. So don't look here. Look here. Yeah. And that is how also they're able to do this. And they use the media very skillfully to do that, this event, that little crisis, everything else, to shift the narrative away from, hey, don't look at who the real enemy is. Focus on this.
So, Kurt, in your previous comments, you mentioned the founders knew they were risking their fortunes and mm-hmm. their reputation, but you left out one important factor there.
Yeah.
Their lives.
Yes.
They knew they were risking their lives.
Very true.
And that's enshrined in our Declaration of Independence, that idea. Mm-hmm. And we're almost at that point.
Well, I think it's like this. You want to live on your feet like a man or die on your knees. I made the decision I'm going to die on my feet.
I'm not dying. The other person is.
More hardcore than I am.
Yeah, I'm like, oh no, it's going the opposite direction, bro. I'll take two with me then. You're going with me. That's
we need to wake up. I know everybody's woken up in different ways, and I mean that in a radically different way. I, when I heard that terminology being thrown, I was like, yeah, I'm all about being woke. And then I was like, whoa, no, not what they're saying. I mean spiritually awake and alert and alive. And I know the different times and ways that God has opened my eyes. And it's one of the biggest prayers I've been praying is, Lord, expose the darkness, expose it in Hollywood, expose it in our government, expose it in the church. And then I weep as it's exposed at the same time. You know, people that I've loved and admired and, you know, have been exposed. And the cost of following the Lord and following what you know to be truth. I knew for me, it started a long time ago spiritually, because I looked at what Jesus taught his disciples, and I had a really good position in a really big church. And I go, if I take this serious, it's going to cost me everything. Mm-hmm. That was my prayer. Lord, would you disciple me? Would you teach me the things that you taught your disciples? And I knew it's going to cost my reputation. I won't be able to get a job at any of the types of churches that I got degrees. I got the undergrad, graduate, PhD, and none of that would open up the door if I'm going to talk about the stuff Jesus talked about. Cast out evil spirits, heal the sick, preach the kingdom of God. And then, like, opening of the eyes about our government. You know, growing up thinking that, you know, Christian nation, our presidents were all godly leaders.
Used to be.
And mm-hmm. and one of the sad things is, like, that the drug cartels have been run by most of our presidents over the last, since I was... knew who was president and cared who was president, they've been involved in the drug trade.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Bushes and Clintons.
I had no idea. Yeah, Bushes and the Clintons and all that kind of stuff. And
so I've heard.
And a lot, but even ministering to the broken people we minister to and hearing their stories and the attachment to people in Hollywood, people in our government positions. Meeting people. We had Jeremy Brown on here, who was arrested, who was Green Beret, who knew about the plan before it went to pass, and called people out. Don't go. Don't get involved. Don't do this. It's a sting operation. And because he knew so much, he's arrested. And then a church that we ministered to in North Carolina, there's a young couple that went there to sell sausages. Had a sausage cart and ended up going in and taking pictures inside the Capitol building, and now are serving consecutive sentences.
Wow.
And it becomes so real. Many people don't know anybody from January 6th. They've never met anybody. They may be struggling financially, but it hasn't hit them yet. Like, people would often say the stuff we dealt with every day in ministry, I'm going, people would call conspiracy theory forever, and I'm like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't believe anybody that I ministered to in a week if this is all conspiracy theory. So I want to thank you guys for being discerning, for having eyes to see, and for stepping out of the comfort zone and getting involved. And I know that the Lord's speaking to me about being involved. And this is the first, not the first step. I've been doing other things, but it's like, okay, God, what next? And I'm like, please don't ask me to run for office. But, you know, it's like, I'll just come to a meeting or do something, you know. But it's like, that's, we have to get to that place where, Lord, whatever you say, the answer's yes. And, yes, Tom.
Can I make one comment? Even when I wasn't living a Christian life, there's one thing that I never forgot. I was raised Christian, but I just didn't live it. One thing I never forgot, don't fear men who can just kill your body.
Yeah.
Fear God that can kill you and destroy your soul. Mm. That's really the most important thing to me. That's really the foundation of my faith.
You know, there's more scriptures that tell us to fear God than there are that tell us do not fear. And I had to wrestle with that because I want to be true to scripture. And I'm like, and everything is God is, and we got a whole concert series, and my new book is about the Father's love. So there's a revelation of the Father's love, and there's the fear of God. And I was like, how do you wed those two? And when I really came to understand that the word fear is awe, what do you respect? What are you in awe of? Are you in awe of the worst scenario, of the worst thing that can happen? Is that what has your awe? Like, oh my gosh, you know, this is happening.
If you fear, you obey.
Yeah. Or if you're in awe of God, you know, and you know he loves you, you're not afraid of him.
Right.
You know, but you fear him.
Respect.
Know. Yep. Honor.
Honor, respect, awe. Reverence.
I think that's a better term because when you say, you know, respect means a lot more than fear. Fear has a connotation, a lot of people, that you rule by fear. Like the worst commanders in the military, the ones that are just martinets and rule by fear, they don't inspire. As good leaders inspire. Managers just manage, but leaders inspire. And by having respect, that's respect because they respect you as a person. You as a man, you as a woman. Not you as a position of authority, but they know that you have their best welfare at heart. And I think as Christians, we know that Jesus and God has our best welfare at heart. Mm-hmm. And fear is sometimes interpret in a negative connotation, but I think the term respect and love do a lot more to bring people to a better understanding than just saying we have a fearful God is going to smite us at this point.
Right. We had that conversation this week, mm-hmm. and it kind of goes to that. I think that as humans, we view God in a humanistic sense. I mean, that's the only way we can because the way our brains are. Like we're not God, and we don't operate the way He does. And always coming back to when I was in seminary a few years ago of just realizing, and for me, because I was brought up very legalistic, fearing the smiting of, mm-hmm. of God, of every single little thing I did wrong, but really coming to that understanding because God is, everything he does is done perfectly. So even though God has anger and he has all of these different attributes, love and kindness and everything else, he operates in them so perfectly that he will never do the things we're afraid he's going to do because he operates in them all so perfectly that it's not like a human would. When we get angry, we sin in that anger. You know, God is never going to sin in the attributes that we have as humans that we misstep and misrepresent. And to me, that always brought me comfort several years ago to realize I can trust him. I can trust him in any attribute that he has, that he will walk that out perfectly. And it's done so lovingly because that's just who he is.
So one thing I think that people need to do if they want to get involved and being called to be involved, I was called and it sounds crazy. Okay. I don't talk about this often, but the day after the election in 2020, I was sitting on my patio and I was crying and I said, God, what can I do? Like, I'm nobody from nowhere. What can I do? And I have you ever heard God's voice? I've heard his voice. You know what it sounds like when you hear it. And yes, probably someone's going to take a sound bite and I'm going to sound crazy. But I swear God said, will you give me 10 years? And I when I heard it, I was like, because I hadn't heard his voice in a while, I said, you know what, God, I have a gun and I'll travel. Where do you want to go? And I was just like, now I'm excited. But but earlier when God calls you to do things, you need to be willing to step out into nothing. Like, I don't know where I'm going, what I'm doing, what I'm going to do when I get there. But God said, just go. Just go. Which direction? Who am I supposed to be talking to? And you find your path. You really do. There's no playbook for activism. I mean, we all know, right? You're just literally like a June bug bumping around till you find your path. And just don't be afraid and go embrace it. Go do it.
Amen. Wow. Does somebody want to close us out in prayer? And I really want prayer also over the listeners, and that God's going to birth a grassroots movement, that others are going to hear that call and clear marching orders. What's that first step? I know for me, I want to come to one of your meetings if I can find out where that is. This is my county, my district, so I want to come. And I know that's like for me one of the first things I'm like going, and it's not easy. I have a special needs son, and most of the time I'm helping my wife, you know, in the evenings, and you know, I would travel and speak all over the place, except that it costs her. So I'm like, I don't do that kind of stuff anymore, and but I'm like, I'm gonna make, you know, minimum, make a meeting and ask God what next. So could somebody pray us out and pray over that stuff?
Go ahead, Tom. You'd like to?
I am such a terrible public prayer. I really hate to do that.
I will.
Okay. All right.
We have two.
Several. We can have several prayers. Yeah. Let's go.
Dear Jesus, we just thank you so much for this time and opportunity to be with like-minded people and just to exchange ideas and to encourage one another, Lord, because we are in this because we did feel called by you for such a time as this, for specific purposes. And you have equipped us, each and every one, with different giftings to use for your kingdom and your glory. And we just ask that you would continue equipping us, continue opening the doors, showing us what it is that you would have us do next, to just be the light in the darkness of this world. And that is what you've called us to do, first and foremost, to love you and to love others, and to just be that shining city on a hill. And I just pray that you equip all of us to just to deal with our lives individually, the junk that we need to work through, so that we can be all that you have called us to be, that when people see us, they see your son, Jesus Christ, shining through us, and that we would be just a fragrant aroma for those around us, that they would be drawn to us and your message and the message of getting out in our communities and raising awareness to bring light into the dark spaces in our world, whether it be in our schools, in our local governments, in our offices, just out on the streets, Lord. Just there's so many people doing such great work. And so I pray for everyone watching, God, this podcast, that you would just stir in them just that little spark. That's all it takes. God, just light that spark inside each and every person that is hearing our words, and that you would just encourage them. You would help open their eyes to what's going on around them. And it just takes one. It just takes one reaching another one. And it's the building, the coalition around of the things that you've called us to do that spark our interest, and that we feel where we can make a difference in the world. And that's going to look different for everyone. But God, you give us the power and you give us the abilities, and it's only through you that we can do these things. And so I just pray for everyone watching, that we've encouraged them, that they would take these words that they heard today and turn it into action to save our country, to preserve our country for the next generation. If they have children, that they, when they look at their children, they would be able to ask themselves, what am I doing to leave this world a better place? And what am I doing to mentor and to show my